welcome to Bicom's weekly podcast. I'm Bicom CEO James Serene, and we're speaking to a number of people about the Israeli election results. I'm delighted to have with me Nadav Eyal, who's one of the leading TV commentators in Israel. He's just written a new book as well about globalization, which we reviewed in our Fathom Journal. But Nadav, let's talk about the Israeli election results. I mean, what was your main piece of analysis after seeing those results? What was the thing that struck you most?
Well, of course, it's the personal victory of Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu is probably going to be indicted. The Attorney General already decided to indict him under the subject of a hearing, which will take place in the coming couple of months. And the thing, of course, about this is that he did not get hurt personally at all of the elections. The right-wing bloc, its numbers decreased slightly, but on a personal level, what we have seen is that as far as the center-right voters are concerned, they just don't care about these indictments at all. It was a huge personal victory for Netanyahu, which managed to increase the power of the Likud.
Yeah, I mean, but did you see something in this massive force that actually was put together to support Gantz? I mean, more than a million people, 35 seats. I mean, it wasn't enough because of the dynamics of the Israeli election system. But I mean, you know, we can argue here, you know, Netanyahu won because of the dynamics of the system, but it was a dead heat in terms of actually the two leading parties. So there's something significant about the fact that Gantz was able to win so many seats. Probably more seats than any opposition party has won for a very, very long time. I mean, he didn't make it into government, but what did you read into that big movement? Or did it just hoover up seats from the left and the center and nothing has really changed?
Well, nothing has really changed. All the blue and white party has done is just to drink, as we say in Hebrew, just drink the mandates that were part of the center left. So they didn't manage to increase really the bloc. It's true that the entire bloc grew by two, the center-left bloc grew by two or three mandates, which is, first of all, not that important. And secondly, it's only because of the threshold being so high. So a lot of the voters for right-wing parties that didn't manage to get in to the Knesset, when you actually look at that data, you see that they didn't manage to increase the number of voters for the center-left at all. So basically, this is a triumph for the people who managed to form that party, of course, because they did get, you know, the best result that a center-left party has got in many years in Israel. But they did that by basically decimating the entire left-wing field and by presenting something that was not true, that if they get enough mandates, even if they don't get a majority in the bloc, and the bloc is the only thing that matters, they maybe manage to form a coalition. But that was, of course, this was a campaign ploy, and it didn't work. It didn't work for Tzipi Livni in 2009, 10 years ago. She did the same thing. She got more mandates than the Likud at the time, but she couldn't form a coalition. The same thing happened with them. Even if after we calculate all the voters, they get one mandate more, it means nothing in Israeli politics if you cannot form a 61-seat coalition. Mm. And the only person who can do that is, of course, Netanyahu. Their job was to transfer voters from the center-right to the center-left. And they basically failed at that job.
Yeah, that was what we were looking for all along. Looking ahead now to the big issues that are going to be part of sort of coalition formation, I mean, I just wanted to ask you about two big issues that seem to be something that they're getting a lot of attention. Number one is, what extent are these coalition negotiations going to have in them a kind of quid pro quo where Prime Minister Netanyahu tries to get either a commitment to support a new immunity law or to at least stick with him all the way through to a criminal trial? How do you see that playing out?
It's going to play out probably not with a new immunity law, but using the immunity laws set already in the Knesset. So Netanyahu is going to argue to the Knesset, and I'm not sure he's going to do that himself, but the Likud is going to argue that there are clauses in the law which allow the Knesset simply not to have his immunity revoked. Hmm. And it's the decision of the Knesset, it's the decision of the parliament to decide that. Now, the Supreme Court has already said very clearly that it is indeed the formal decision of parliament, but they need to have very substantial reasons, which, you know, most legal advisors would say they don't have, in order to keep the immunity in while he is indicted for corruption. But he's going to go that track. He's probably not going to go with a new kind of French immunity, American immunity laws, which say that he has immunity while he is in power, because that would be retroactive and probably be struck by the Supreme Court anyway, because the Attorney General already decided to indict them subject to a hearing. Yeah. And it's a good case to make that even if they say the actual indictment was not put forward, that this is really a very retroactive act. So you're probably going to use the immunity laws set in place right now, and it's going to go to the Supreme Court. If he's going to go that way, it will go to the Supreme Court, and many, many legal minds in this country think that the Supreme Court will, again, strike it anyway. This brings us, any way you look at it, this brings us to a constitutional crisis which relates to the personal criminal problems of the Prime Minister, and that's a big thing.
Yeah, and on the other side of that, to what extent is the quid pro quo for parties to support this kind of move going to be a desire to achieve some kind of move towards either annexing settlements in the West Bank, or at least doing what Prime Minister Netanyahu said in the campaign, applying Israeli sovereignty to settlements? I mean, it seems to me, looking at the potential coalition, that Yisrael Beiteinu may support this, certainly the United Right Party, and there are some elements within the Likud. It's kind of Likud policy also to pursue some of this. So how much do you think this is going to feature in the coalition negotiations?
This is a big question, but we won't have an answer for this question clearly, because Netanyahu cannot seem to look like he is trying to push a personal law or personal immunity on corruption charges, as a quid pro quo to annexation. This would look terrible. It might also be a legal problem as of itself. So we won't know anything about it. It's clear that this is Israeli politics. Everything's on the table. Mm. It's clear that the right-wing bloc and the ultra-Orthodox and all these new members of Knesset, they don't want another election. So they got, you know, members of the Likud. It's a great result for the Likud, a fantastic result, the best result in 16 years. It's a fantastic result for the ultra-Orthodox parties, which are now 16 seats in the Knesset. Together, there are more than 50 seats that just got, you know, an incredible result. And these people are going to say, we want Netanyahu in for good. It has nothing to do with their demands. They want him to have his full term because they don't want another election in 4 years. And I should remind us that basically when the Prime Minister has to resign, if he has to resign, the government resigns with him. And the country, there is a big chance that the country will go to an election. It's not necessarily the case, but there's a big chance that would happen. And because of that, they want to shield him. So he's in a really great position because they want to defend him. I don't want to say as much as he wants to defend himself from these criminal charges, but not far from it, just in order to survive.
Yeah. How much do you agree with the analysis that this was kind of just the first phase of a sort of a long Israeli election campaign that may not be over for 2 years? I mean, you know, yes, this is a victory for Netanyahu kind of yesterday, but there's a really long haul here, and you could potentially see another upheaval in Israeli politics if his corruption case proceeds. Do you agree with that? We could see another general election in a year or two?
Yeah, we can, and in the end, it seems that in terms of his legal problems, they're not going to go away. And the assessment within the spheres, also of the Likud, is that this guy is going to get indicted, and that if he is indicted, he won't be able to remain in power no matter what he does. People talk about immunity. People talk about sort of the French or American immunity but laws. But people believe that it will be unstoppable. Also because during this campaign, another allegedly corruption scandal broke out with his stocks being sold and not reported, and that relates or does not relate to the submarine scandal. So it just seems that the Attorney General's hands are full with corruption scandals related to the Prime Minister, and at least history has shown us in Israel that Prime Minister and ministers cannot stop this from reaching the courts. Now, this is Netanyahu, and Netanyahu in 3 months is going to cross the threshold of David Ben-Gurion. He's going to be the person serving the most time as Prime Minister in this country. And that means that maybe, he has, a different circumstance all around him politically, and managed to somehow defend himself, save himself from indictment. But nobody really sees the scenario in which he is indicted and he is going to a criminal court while serving as Prime Minister for years. He says he can do that. He says, on the record, I can do that. He answers this question. But people are saying in the political sphere they don't really believe it can happen. It can also worsen his condition legally, because the courts will take this into account, that he refused to resign, and this could lead to a longer prison sentence. And right now, what the state is demanding is those things that he's indicted for. These are prison sentences indictments. And that means that he's taking a huge personal risk here if he wants to fight everything out, including the Supreme Court. In the end, he will go to the Supreme Court as part of his legal trial. I'm not sure he wants to have a constitutional crisis with the judicial authority right now. I'm not sure it would be a good tactic for him to run. But again, this is Netanyahu. He has shown us that he can get elected 4 or 5 times. And he has shown us he can build any coalition. And maybe he can just change Israel also in that sense.
Yeah. Wow, lots to think about. Well, Nadav, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.
I'd now like to move on to Professor Avi Diskin, who is the Professor of Political Science at the Hebrew University. Avi,
just from your experience of analysing Israeli elections, what really struck you about the results so far?
I would say that Netanyahu took a gamble in his campaign strategy. He decided to do whatever is in his power to increase the size of his own party, the Likud, and because of the very high electoral threshold, it was quite obvious that it might damage the small parties, the small right-wing parties, that will not overcome the threshold. So it took a gamble, and generally speaking, it was successful. It may have hurt one of the parties that belongs to his bloc, but altogether it worked, and I thought that that was the most interesting as far as campaign tactics are involved. As far as the results are concerned, I think that all the public opinion polls predicted that the right-wing parties combined will have a majority, and also that this majority would be a little bit lower than the majority that the right-wing parties had in the previous election. And that actually worked as predicted. And the main surprise was really the size of the Likud especially, but the two large parties, also on the other block, the blue-white party, compared with the size of the small parties on each of the blocks.
Do you think anything more interesting is happening on the center-left other than just blue-white party just sucking up seats that would otherwise have gone to Labour, as they did in 2015? Did you see anything more significant going on there?
First of all, I think that what you just said is extremely significant, because let us remember that the Labour Party was the founding father, or founding mother, if I can say so, of the state of Israel. We had so many prime ministers coming from that party, and now it shrink to a size of a negligible party. So that's really quite dramatic if you look at it from an historical point of view. Second, we don't know what's going to happen with this bloc, because the most successful party in this bloc is not a party. It's actually an electoral deal made in the very last minute between three different parties. So we don't know if it's going to last, if it's going to crack, and if it does split, what's going to be the intentions of the components, including there is a possibility that one of these components will sooner or later join a right-wing led cabinet. So it's more of an earthquake, I would say, on the left wing than on the right wing, because everything now is different. The left wing in Israel is really very weak. We have four very, very small factions, two of them Arab, two of them Jewish. And if we look at history, you know, this bloc had the vast majority of, you know, a single party, even one of that bloc, at the peak of its power, had 56 seats out of 120. So now to shrink and to be beaten in such a way, that's an earthquake.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What did you make of the predictions that those small right-wing parties, the Hood or the New Right, were going to get seats, and then they didn't? Did you see that as just quite simply that was Netanyahu's strategy paying off, as you said earlier, that you know, he pulled those voters away and just said, vote for me? Did you think there was anything more significant going on? I mean, that sort of the end of that New Right party, if we see that Naftali Bennett doesn't make it into the Knesset, that's quite significant, isn't it, in terms of the parties on the right?
I would say so. First of all, I think that the success of these two parties that you mentioned, the Hut and the New Right, in the public opinion polls was because of, you know, maybe desperation of many voters from the regular alternatives. So once everybody was mobilized to vote on the right, to vote after all for the Likud, it damaged this new party. With new parties, you never know. You know, they might... there are other parties, by the way, in Israel that did very well in public opinion polls. For instance, Oli Levy, Abbasis, you know, the Gesher party. And so, you know, with new parties, they don't have a stable base.
Yeah.
They have to build that. And everything depends on the atmosphere that develops. I don't think that actually there were any mistakes in the public opinion polls. I think that the atmosphere at the very last moment was that it's a neck-to-neck race between the two large parties. And anyone who is a right-winger wants to save the right must, so to say, vote for Netanyahu, for the Likud. By the way, I don't think that it's correct. You know, if the right-wing parties combined had a majority, it wouldn't matter. But, you know, that was not the atmosphere. And I think that was what happened with these two parties. Let me also add that in the case of the New Right, Bennett Shaked, there is still a reasonable possibility that they will somehow meet threshold.
To get more votes.
And if they do meet the threshold, it's instead of zero, it's four.
Yeah.
So that's a whole new story.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's any chance whatsoever that there could be a national unity government between the Blue-White Party and Likud? Do you see any situation where that might be a possibility?
I think definitely yes, there is a possibility. It depends on several issues. First of all, what happens with Netanyahu in the short run?
Yeah.
Indictments, etc., etc. Second, there is the question of whether the blue-white coalition would stay together or it would split.
Yeah,
I believe based on the behavior of Netanyahu following two of the last of the previous election, I believe that Netanyahu would like to have at least part of blue-white in his coalition, because right now he depends actually on each and every one of the small components in his cabinet, and these are not some of these components are so to say tough nuts that proved sometimes very problematic in the past. And because of that, and also because of the tendency of Netanyahu usually to try to lean on the center or even on the left. Remember Barak with four ministries for five Knesset members after he split with, from Labor, or the cooperation with Labor after the 2009 election. I think there is a real possibility for such a development, but in the short run, it's a small right-wing coalition.
Which part of the blue-white, which part of the blue-white group do you think is the most likely to split? You mentioned that one might go into government with Netanyahu. Who do you think that might be?
I'll tell you what the problems are with two of the components.
Yeah.
First of all, Yalon's group would have joined. Yalon is, I think, quite close in his general views to Netanyahu. But there is personal animosity. A lot of emotions are involved. And that make it very difficult. Yalon is very bitter about his history with Netanyahu. With Yair Lapid and Yesh Atid, the problem is their stance on religious affairs. And if you have Yair Lapid in the coalition, you lose 16 seats. Because both Haredi party were very, very successful in this election, and they are very, very hostile to Yair Lapid. So that leaves us with Benny Gantz. I think that here, you, in spite of this very bitter campaign of both sides, I do not believe that there are such emotional backgrounds as in the case of Yalon.
Yeah.
And because of that, I would say that he's the most likely to join. And also, two of his top candidates served under Netanyahu. One of them is the secretary of the government, and I don't think that this person, Zvi Hauser, is hostile to Netanyahu. I also believe that he's quite right-winger on almost every possible issue, so that's a possibility. But that's for the long run. In the short run, I think right-wing religious coalition will be formed.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much for that, and thank you very much for answering our questions.
You are most welcome.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. I would like to remind all our regular listeners, if you are enjoying the content or if you'd like to suggest different content, then please review us on iTunes, tell us what you think, reply to us at Britain Israel on Twitter, comment on our Facebook page, let us know what you'd like us to talk about next. Thank you.